Local news can come at you fast. Want the latest on what's happening in your backyard? Download the free Odyssey app. Follow your local news station, and you'll get alerts on the top stories making headlines in your city. You can stay in the know, no matter what you're up to, and be among the first to find out when news breaks. Plus, keep tabs on weather and traffic, so you're never caught off guard. To get started, download the Odyssey app. That's A-U-D-A-C-Y. And follow your local news station.
From Odyssey, I'm Lauren Berry, and this is the On Deadline podcast, where we give you a deeper dive into stories from our radio newsrooms across the country. Today at On Deadline, we're looking into Lewis and Clark. Yeah, you heard me right. President-elect Donald Trump continues to talk about expansion of America, and he's doing this while pundits debate about how much of what he's saying is meaningful or true and how much is just rhetoric. Either way, Trump has already said numerous times in the lead-up to his inauguration that he is looking to add to the United States land holdings. And how is he planning to do this, you might ask? Well, you've probably already heard that he's proposed acquiring Greenland and the Panama Canal. He's even suggested that we merge with our northern neighbors in Canada. While at first the plans may have seemed, well, outlandish, it appears that the president-elect is serious about them. Trump has said that acquiring Greenland in particular has become an absolute necessity for the U.S., while stressing that it's also important to regain control of the Panama Canal. There is one issue, though. Both of these are currently not up for sale. But that doesn't seem to matter to the former president, who has remained adamant that the U.S. will continue to grow under his second term in the White House. Of course, the U.S. has grown in the past, but it's been a while. The U.S.'s list of past annexations includes the Louisiana Purchase of 1803, the Texas annexation of 1845, and the acquisition of Hawaii in 1898. The last time the U.S. actually annexed anything was in 1947. That's when we annexed the Mariana, Caroline, and Marshall Islands. With his new proposals to make the U.S. bigger, Trump even said that he wouldn't rule out using the military to accomplish these goals. So, what should we really expect? CBS's Scott McFarlane joined Odyssey to talk about it and about how Trump's statements are already making an impact.
There's going to be no quiet during a presidential transition, especially when it's a Donald Trump presidential transition, because at any moment he will say something provocative or newsmaking, and that's what's happening. And some of these statements about Greenland, Panama, and Canada becoming a state are making noise, but not raising concern because they seem so far-fetched and so random. But they do kind of forecast or foreshadow what's to come, which is a destabilized moment where the unexpected happens at unexpected times. And that rattles not just world leaders around the globe, but domestically, his political allies who have to react to everything Trump says. I can't tell you, as somebody who's been in the Capitol the last few weeks, we've spent an inordinate amount of our time, Brian, asking Republicans what they think about Trump's Truth Social posts. We'll see how tenable that is in the long term.
You mentioned it being unstable, which is, it's kind of like the new thing for, I guess, journalists to do in Washington is you take a lot of these statements and try and figure out how, you know, it's like a moving scale. You know, how serious is Trump when he's talking about some of these things? Because a lot of it's easy to write off, but it's almost like we don't even really know.
Well, his appointees are people who are devoted loyalists to Donald Trump, so he'll expect them to not push back, but to push forward with his ideas. So everything he says is getting a distinctive level of credibility here in Washington, because what Congress is seeing here and what the civil servants in the federal government are seeing is that it is Trump's most ardent allies who are poised to take over the reins of power, too. I mean, Pam Bondi, who is his designee to be the attorney general, has been a champion of Donald Trump throughout his political career and has made so much of her life and portfolio about championing Donald Trump. She will be the nation's top law enforcement officer in a position that is supposed to have a unique amount of independence from the White House. There's no indication she would use that distinctive independence as somebody who's been such a Trump loyalist. And the same is true up and down the line. Cash Patel, ardent Trump surrogate to be FBI director. Pete Hegseth, somebody who Trump has developed a particularly close relationship with, bonding over, among other things, Fox News to be defense secretary. These are not people positioned to push back on any unbridled Donald Trump ideas.
Now we'll take a quick pit stop in Denmark, where Prime Minister Mette Frederiksen and her administration say they're communicating with Trump's team about Greenland. We should note here that Greenland is 80% covered with ice, but it also has treasure in the form of considerable untapped mineral wealth. If we move on to Canada, the closest country to Greenland, we'll find that tension has already been high, in part because of Trump's other proposals for tariffs. These tensions increased earlier this month when longtime Prime Minister Justin Trudeau announced that he would be stepping down from his position. Trudeau was facing a tough upcoming election where polls showed that his Liberal Party would be staunchly beaten by the opposing Conservative Party and their leader, Pierre Poilievre. Now that Trudeau is leaving his position, what will it mean for Canada and the U.S.? Xavier Delgado, a senior program associate at the Wilson Center Canada Institute, joined Odyssey to share more about the situation.
His popularity just was wide-ranging, and especially the way he got his start in politics. I know he was the son of the former prime minister. Talk about his meteoric rise to power in Canada.
There's a book that came out about Prime Minister Trudeau recently called The Prince, and I think it's an apt title. He came into the spotlight not as a politician, but as the son of former Prime Minister Pierre Elliott Trudeau. And from that moment on, he was almost a celebrity. When he first came into the caucus, the Liberals were the third largest party in Parliament. They were not even the official opposition. He came in as a member of Parliament, eventually won the party leadership, and from there just took the Liberals to a historic win in 2015 that saw them win a majority government from the Harper government that had been in power for almost a decade. And then from there, off the back of social policy promises, such as implementing appointing a cabinet that was 50% female, 50% male, promises to expand protections for LGBTQ community. He continued to rise to power as this Liberal media darling.
So he was a Liberal media darling. Now he's not. What led to his resignation?
Well, it's worth noting that most prime ministers in Canada don't last anywhere near a decade. The fact that he's lasted 9 years, the majority of which has been in power as a minority government, is astounding. That being said, we did see his popularity starkly decline this year. His ruling Liberal Party went from being the favorite to win the election at the start of, or when they came into power in 2021, after winning their most recent election. Now they're barely projected to be the official opposition. It's really a stunning decline that's been brought about by anger regarding economic recovery post-COVID, regarding some of their handling of immigration issues in Canada. We've seen rising unemployment, inflation, as we have seen across the world, including in the United States, as well as other issues regarding housing prices and unaffordability across the country.
Yeah, it all sounds very familiar. I mean, does it surprise you that the political trends we tend to think are unique to the U.S. are more accurately world trends for other democracies as well?
It's a funny thing. When people, of course, there's been a lot of news in the United States about inflation and unaffordability. But if you go to Canada, they point to the United States as an example of something to aspire to. When they talk about the productivity rate in Canada, they compare it to the United States' much higher productivity rate. When they talk about declining inflation rates, they talk about how the U.S. has managed to recover economically much faster than Canada has. So although the United States does have its own issues, I think contextualizing that in the picture of global economic recovery is really important. Than in Canada. It's just been a stark contrast that the prime minister couldn't overcome.
Interesting point. Thank you. How do you think the relationship will change between U.S. and Canada? Justin Trudeau is stepping down. Someone's going to take his place. And of course, Donald Trump is going to be president of the United States again in a couple of weeks. Does the relationship change?
Well, certainly an interesting moment. While the prime minister is stepping down in Ottawa, Congress is assembling here in Washington to certify the results of President-elect Trump's win in the 2024 election. At the personal level, I think it's no secret that the president-elect and the prime minister had an icy relationship. relationship stemming from philosophical differences, stemming from certain embarrassing incidents like Trudeau being caught mocking Trump's press conferences on a hot mic, like Trump calling out Trudeau, calling him the son of Fidel Castro. But structurally, the issues don't change between Canada and the United States. Canada still will have a hard time spending 2% of its GDP on defense. It will still have a hard time balancing the trade deficit that the United States has with it. There's still going to be concerns about northern border security that are championed by the Trump administration. So these issues aren't going to go away, even if a conservative government comes into power post-Trudeau resignation.
When it comes to how real his talk is, many point out that Trump often floats ideas that he never follows through on, or that he never even thought about carrying out. This approach is more about inspiring passion among his supporters than creating an actual plan. Remember back in 2016 when Trump was a presidential candidate? He'd start chants of lock her up at rallies, promising to prosecute his Democratic rival and our former Secretary of State, Hillary Clinton. Do we also remember that once Trump was in office, the efforts to prosecute Clinton pretty much vanished? So it is possible that Trump's latest headline-making remarks are just a smokescreen for something else. We're wondering, is the president-elect attempting to draw eyes elsewhere while trying to achieve something else? To bring us some insight on Trump's upcoming battles, specifically getting his cabinet appointees approved in the Senate, David Levine, a professor at the U.S. College of Law in San Francisco, joined Odyssey.
So what can we expect with these Senate hearings? Are they a test of loyalty to Donald Trump, both from the nominees and from the senators?
Well, yes, Steve, certainly on the Republican side. What we're going to see is these hearings are kind of night and day, depending on whether it is the turn of a Republican senator or a Democratic senator. So the Republican senators will be very, very supportive of the nominees, will use up some time to just say nice things about them and about Mr. Trump, and then we'll throw a softball or two to the nominee. In general, that's what will happen. On the Democratic side, then they will be asking much more pointed questions, trying to see if they can drive any wedge between utter loyalty to Mr. Trump and the obligation of these people, especially somebody like the Attorney General or the head of the FBI, to pledge allegiance to the Constitution, not to Mr. Trump. So we'll see. But it will look very different as the turns for questioning bounce back and forth between members of the committee.
I wonder about the senators, and specifically the Republican senators. Dare they defy Donald Trump and perhaps vote against one of his nominees?
I think we'll see almost all of these nominees get through, if not all of them. As we know, some of them are very, very controversial. Somebody like Robert Kennedy Jr. May well get some negative votes from the Republican side because of some of his views about medical science, some of his views about vaccines, but also some of his views that are anti-big corporations like Big Pharma and his past support of abortion. So he may be one who will draw some negative votes. Tulsi Gabbard for the intelligence agency may also draw some negative votes. But I do think at the end of the day, you have to expect that most of the Republicans, nearly all the Republicans, almost every time, will vote for the nominee, and nearly all the Democrats will vote against all of these nominees. So each one will probably squeak through. But there are a few, they're very controversial, and they may or may not make it.
Well, Republicans do have the majority in the Senate, so if they vote by party lines, the nominees will be approved. What would this cabinet look like if at least the majority are in fact confirmed?
Well, it would be the richest cabinet we've ever seen. Some of these people are distinguished by their immense wealth. Somebody like Doug Borum in Interior, as a good example, have just huge, huge money. We've never seen a cabinet like that. And if they get through with utter loyalty, then we're going to have people just ready to jump when Mr. Trump says it's time to jump. They're just going to say, how high? So we're going to see a very conservative group, no question of that. But we'll see how much they really are going to be true to the people who they said they were going to be representing. You know, they promised lower prices on eggs and other things. We'll see if any of them actually deliver on any of those things.
every story has a backstory. And here's what's been rumbling behind the scenes of Trump's recent rhetoric. The BBC noted that when it comes to Greenland, Trump's comments could just be bluster to boost the country's security as both Russia and China try to seek influence in the region. When it comes to our northern neighbors, The Hill reported that the idea of a union between the U.S. and Canada dates back centuries. Leaders even invaded Quebec during the American Revolution. A few decades later, the U.S. unsuccessfully invaded Canada during the War of 1812. Eventually, we settled on becoming fierce allies, which is, of course, how we remain today. With this in mind, let's address how the incoming Trump administration is rattling sabers about better trade deals or 25% tariffs on Canadian goods. Any good negotiator knows you ask for the sky. In this case, that might be, for instance, annexation of Canada, and then you settle for what you actually want. In this case, for instance, maybe a better trade deal. And the same thing could be said of Trump's Panama Canal proposal. This is a crucial maritime passageway linking the Atlantic and Pacific Oceans. And the Panamanian government has been charging the U.S. too much in fees to use it in shipping, according to Trump. Since we're down in Latin America already, let's talk about another surprising Trump proposal: renaming the Gulf of Mexico to the Gulf of America. It's unclear how serious Trump is about it, but a Republican lawmaker has already drafted legislation for the renaming. As Politico noted, even convincing the federal government to change the name couldn't force other countries, including Mexico, to update their own maps. And it's not even a given that a change would stick here. Take this example. Following the assassination of President John F. Kennedy in 1963, then-President Lyndon Johnson changed the name of Florida's Cape Canaveral to Cape Kennedy. Within a decade, the Board on Geographic Names changed it back. This show is produced by Joe Heady, Christy Strouser, and by me. I'm Lauren Barry, and I want to say thanks for listening to On Deadline. Odyssey's serving of a top news story just for you. Subscribe on the Odyssey app or wherever you find your podcasts to stay informed.